The issue here is you can't be so positive that sounds like you're being unrealistic or just willfully staying away from the facts.
Coronavirus continues to infect. It's Monday, March 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the U.S. Congress pledges money to fight the virus. U.S. tourism braces for a viral impact. Democracy takes a hit. Ballet and Native American art go on display. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Italy's coronavirus death toll spiked Sunday by 133 to 366. That's the most in any country outside of China. With the growing health risks, Rome imposed a new emergency decree locking down the northern part of the country with a quarter of Italy's population, including the Lombardy region and financial capital Milan. Italy is also closing off 14 other provinces while asking retired doctors to return to service to help treat coronavirus victims. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization said that 100 countries are now reporting coronavirus cases, with more than 100,000 people reported ill. In the United States, there have been at least 19 deaths. Surgeon General Jerome Adams told CNN that U.S. health officials want Americans, especially older people, to rethink travel in an effort to limit their risk. Adams said the U.S. expects to have 2 million test kits available by today. President Trump has been criticized for what some view as inaccurate and misleading statements regarding the coronavirus threat. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara looks into why some say the president's unique style of communication is not helpful during a public health crisis.
President Donald Trump signed a more than $8 billion bill that provides federal funding for vaccines, tests, and potential treatments for COVID-19.
I asked for 2.5, and I got 8.3. And I'll take it.
Some have criticized Trump for downplaying the coronavirus crisis.
In terms of cases, it's very, very few.
While pumping up his administration's response.
My administration has also taken the most aggressive action in modern history to protect Americans from the coronavirus.
There are potentially misleading statements.
In April, when it gets warm, historically, that has been able to kill the virus.
And the occasional joke.
And I haven't touched my face in weeks. In weeks.
Mr. President,
I miss it.
In times of crisis, analysts say people look to their leader to be the comforter-in-chief. Vanessa Beasley is a professor of presidential rhetoric at Vanderbilt University.
U.S. history shows us that we want presidents to be positive. So the public confidence is increased when presidents give a positive message. But the issue here is you can't be so positive that sounds like you're being unrealistic or just willfully staying away from the facts.
Trump's statements have been corrected at times by his own officials.
They're going to have vaccines, I think, relatively soon.
That entire process will take at least a year and a year and a half.
His supporters say most people can tell whether Trump is being serious or not.
When you see him in the Brady briefing room, he comes across as authoritative. He kind of yields a stage to the experts and so forth. And then, of course, when you see him at a Keep America Great rally, he's much more boisterous, much more entertaining. And that leads to, I think, opportunities for attack.
But in a public health crisis, analysts say clear and credible communication is key, which is why Trump's rhetoric on the coronavirus could hurt his re-election campaign.
We're going to start to see people say, hey, wait a minute, maybe it does matter if he's credible. Maybe it does matter if he has the facts or not. And I think that's one of the things that a public health crisis brings to the forefront of his presidency that some of the other situations and even crises that we've been in up till this point have not done.
One poll shows only 37% of voters agree with Trump's assessment that his administration is doing a great job in dealing with the coronavirus. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News at the White House.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. 10 dead, 28 missing in China quarantine hotel collapse. Philippine clashes leave 14 militants and 4 soldiers dead. First case of coronavirus found in Cambodia. China scrambles to boost its image on coronavirus. International Women's Day highlights importance of gender equality in workplace. You can read and watch much more on VOA Asia, Facebook, also Twitter, and the VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. lawmakers quickly passed more than $8 billion in emergency funding last week to address the growing coronavirus crisis. Officials in Nevada, Illinois, New York, and Maryland have announced new cases among the 102 people testing positive for the coronavirus in 14 U.S. states. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
This vote.
Growing concerns prompting almost unanimous passage of a bill funding the response.
The American people, I believe, expect us here in the U.S. Senate to set aside politics and set into motion a swift and a sweeping response to this danger. And in situations like this, I believe no expense should be spared to protect the American people.
Just a week ago, Democrats said the White House was underestimating the amount of money needed to respond to the crisis. Republicans, recognizing the good the bill will do, said negotiations should not have been delayed. The bipartisan deal also includes about $3 billion for the development of a vaccine.
Speed up the development of vaccines, increase access to testing, treatments, and will expand access to telemedicine to make it easier to see their doctors remotely. This is very good news, but is also a reprieve that was unnecessarily delayed. Since it became clear that coronavirus was becoming more serious, I had urged our colleagues to leave politics out of the national discussion.
But the president still received harsh criticism from Democrats.
We saw misinformation on national television, downplaying of potential risk to the American people by the president. I was concerned that he worried more about a market impact than human lives.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi did acknowledge U.S. health officials had also been slow to respond.
We weren't ready in terms of the advisories that were being put forth by the CDC, saying you only test somebody if they just had a trip to China or if they're old and have diabetes or something like that. Well, that was not the appropriate guidance.
Homeland Security officials told lawmakers the ultimate goal is to contain the virus.
This has never been, from day one, intended to be a hermetically sealed process. We are trying to reduce and delay the biggest peak in the virus wave hit on the United States of America. And all of these steps reduce and delay, they do not stop the virus.
Lawmakers like California's Katie Porter are now receiving their own regular briefings on the coronavirus.
Is that the risk of transmission generally across the country remains low. It's higher, obviously, in certain places in the country. California is one of those places, along with Washington State. But the continued risk remains low.
The Trump administration's Health and Human Services Secretary joined in on reassuring a nervous public.
We're being radically transparent with what we know when we know it, as well as the uncertainties that we face. We acknowledged that this is a time of angst and concern and uncertainty for many people.
President Trump is expected to sign the $8.3 billion funding bill into law by the end of the week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Happening now in Asia, the Ministry of Emergency Management in China says 10 people have died in the collapse late Saturday of a hotel in Guangzhou. State media said the location was being used to quarantine individuals under observation for the coronavirus. Authorities have retrieved 48 individuals from the site. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Florida is one of the most popular tourist destinations here in the United States. Its warm climate and miles-long beautiful beaches attract vacationers and those willing to relocate or retire. But with the threat of a coronavirus epidemic, things might not look so sunny for Florida tourism. Lilia Anisimova has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Amid the coronavirus outbreak throughout the world, Florida officials are gearing up for the possibility their booming tourism industry might take a hit. The reason is that if the virus continues to spread, the Global Business Travel Association says spending on travel could drop by over 30% worldwide. Right now, it's the uncertainty that is the biggest factor.
I don't think we know enough about this virus at this point to really be able to make a good statement about whether or not southern versus northern states are going to be more or less affected. But we can look to China, for example, and we didn't really see big changes there.
None of the 11 international U.S. airports that accommodate flights from China are located in Florida. However, Florida is one of the nation's busiest cruise ship ports. In 2019, more than 1,200 cruise ships left from Miami carrying over 6 million passengers. One of the biggest companies, Carnival Cruise Lines, says it continues work as usual, going to North America and Australia. Yet passengers that arrived to the U.S. from China, Hong Kong and Macau and booked a trip on one of the Florida cruise ships are temporarily banned on board of all the company vessels.
Say for tourist companies and businesses, the most important thing is probably to really keep an eye on what countries, at the moment anyway, keep an eye on what countries have the most cases. So like right now, it would not be a good idea to have a tour group go to Iran or South Korea or China.
Some Florida universities, like the Florida International University, have put international travel to places like Italy, Singapore, Japan, and South Korea on hold, and some number of international scientific projects have also been canceled. Richard Cirino, professor at the Harvard University School of Public Health, says Florida will be hit by the new coronavirus a little later, both medically and economically.
Right now, it does have a higher mortality rate, we think, because, again, we don't have great data out of China. We don't know exactly how many people really get sick. Every day there's new information. We're learning more each and every day. So as I said at the very beginning, this is the time to prepare in case it gets very bad. The CDC issued that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
The first cases of coronavirus were confirmed in Florida in the first week of March. Local authorities are doing their best to inform locals and tourists of the virus spread in the state online. For Lilia Anisimova in Miami, Florida, NRI's VOA News.
Coming up, setbacks for global democracy. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
News from VOA Asia. The coronavirus epidemic prompted China to ban the unregulated trade of wildlife and consumption of wild animals. Now the World Wildlife Fund is calling on Southeast Asia, a key hub of wildlife trafficking and source of contraband for Chinese customers, to follow in China's footsteps. Visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the nonprofit group Freedom House has released its annual report on freedom and the state of democracy around the world. Continuing a 14-year trend, some of the findings are discouraging. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, the group says individual freedoms and democratic systems are under attack.
Freedom House's annual report says democracy and freedom are in a state of decline around the world. From crackdowns of demonstrators in Hong Kong protesting Chinese rule to repression of crowds in Iran demanding change in the Islamic Republic. The report shows regimes using brute force to maintain control. It also notes disturbing trends in some advanced democracies.
Democracy is in trouble. This year, we've seen an assault on equal rights and the rights of vulnerable groups in both democracies and under brutal regimes. All of this has added up to this being the 14th consecutive year of decline in global democracy.
Sarah Rapucci is vice president of research and analysis at Freedom House. She says more governments have targeted religious and ethnic minorities.
There is definitely a real trend of countries scapegoating a minority population or testing out techniques on a minority population that then they spread more widely.
Rapucci says repressive societies like China use surveillance first on smaller scales before expanding to monitor and control the country at large. Despite that, she says, people in Hong Kong show a determination to fight for freedom.
It's quite clear from the demonstrations in Hong Kong that those people see freedom and democracy as just as important as people in other parts of the world. The movement in Hong Kong is incredibly important and needs to be supported so that the Chinese government wakes up to the reality of what their people want.
Benin had flawed elections last year. Rapucci says the country's freedom and democracy score dropped to levels typically reserved for countries that have a coup or a war.
To have such an extreme change due to an election in a country that had been one of Africa and especially West Africa's success stories is very troubling for the trajectory of democracy in Africa.
She adds that some countries show progress.
Sudan overall is one of the bright spots of the past year. The fact that a popular movement was able to overthrow a president who had been in power for 30 years and had been convicted of genocide is an enormous story.
Rapucci says hope comes from citizens willing to rise up. Even so, Freedom House's annual report shows that countries suffering setbacks outnumber those making gains by a margin of 2-1. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia. Friends of prominent Chinese activist and legal academic Su Jiyang, who has urged President Xi Jinping to step down over the coronavirus epidemic and other crises, say that he's been held by authorities in secret detention on a state security charge that carries a maximum sentence of 15 years in jail. Visit VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a unique exhibition called Ballerina, Fashion's Modern Muse, recently opened in New York's Museum of the Fashion Institute of Technology. The unusual exposition includes more than 100 costumes from the most famous of world collections. Nina Veshneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Exactly 1,537 feathers. That's the number multiple exhibit curators came up with when they took the time to count feathers on Anna Pavlova's swan dress. The unique ballerina apparel traveled from London to New York in a special safe. And even here, in the Big Apple, the fascinating costume was displayed at the exhibit in a special transparent case. The exhibition, called Ballerina, Fashion's Modern Muse, opened in New York's museum at the Fashion Institute of Technology, will stay open to the public until mid-April. It's a unique opportunity to showcase the beautiful marriage of two arts, ballet and fashion.
Ballet is an ancient art form, and it's had tremendous impact on culture and fashion throughout the 20th century. It became so popular in Great Britain and the United States, it was the number one performing art form in Great Britain in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. But it's Russia and the Russian artists who we have to thank for this reinvigoration.
Coco Chanel, Christian Dior, Pierre Balmain, Valentino, and Yves Saint Laurent. Among others, these outstanding fashion designers brought something exquisite and stunning to the art of ballet dance. Mixing catwalk and stage, haute couture aesthetics, and pirouette, they created an unusual grace in clothing. After all, ballet and ballerinas have been inspiring designers for over 100 years.
I was a ballerina as a child, and many American children were. And there's just so many memories, the beautiful toe shoes.
Contemporary designers like Noritaka Takahana are one of the few that have really taken that idea to an extreme. And these particular ones were worn by Lady Gaga.
Coco Chanel was one of the first designers to see ballerinas in a new light. She exchanged the familiar ballet tutu skirts for more sleek athletic wear and put up hairdos swapped for neat buns. Beyond the stage, it was the ballerinas that introduced new fashion trends. They became the trendsetters. Enthusiastic ballet fans try to copy the unmistakable style of Anna Pavlova and her love for furs. And later, this love spilled over to Margot Fonteyn, the muse of Christian Dior and Yves Saint Laurent. But it's not just sparkles and gems that comprise the exhibit. There are also tiny ballet skirts of the wartime 1940s that were re-sewn for girls from their mom's dresses. Skirts, tutus, ballet shoes, all this formerly strictly ballet attire easily found its way into today's fashion outside the stage. Their stage today is the city streets, as bright and sometimes just as grueling. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Most Native American artwork is created by Native women, and yet for centuries their individual contributions have largely remained unrecognized and anonymous, until now. VOA's Julie Tabo has more from a Washington, D.C. gallery.
A major new exhibition in the heart of Washington celebrates the artistic achievements of Native American women with more than 80 works of art. Hearts of Our People, Native Women Artists, is the first exhibit of its kind, says Anya Montiel, curator of American and Native American women's art and craft at the Renwick Gallery of the Smithsonian American Art Museum.
There have been other exhibitions in the past that have featured only Native women artists, but those exhibitions tended to feature contemporary art. So the curators of this show, they wanted to make sure that this exhibition is comprehensive in the time span, as well as including many different artistic mediums as possible.
Those mediums range from paintings, textiles, and sculptures to baskets and even wearable art. The exhibit explores three central themes: legacy, relationship, and power.
Legacy is really talking about continuum. A lot of these artists have learned these traditions from their ancestors.
Adorned with teeth from hunted elk, it took many years to gather enough to decorate a single dress.
So you have this dress that is put together by the women of the family, but with this beautiful decoration that really shows the legacy of the entire family.
The theme of relationship represents the connection between humans and the earth.
This one is called Wisdom of the Universe by Christy Belcourt, and it looks like beadwork, but it's actually all painting in acrylic. And upon closer inspection, the insects, the birds, and the plants are actually endangered species. And so it's really presenting to us, well, what are we going to do about this?
The theme of power speaks to the authority of Native women within their nations.
Especially for the Muscogee Creek, they are a matrilineal nation. The women were the ones who made the decisions, especially about whether or not they were going to go to war.
Visitors at the exhibit had an emotional response.
The last piece I was just looking at had a scar from a woman's shoulder to her hip, and the trauma of a culture that has been really traumatized by another was extremely impactful.
The one over there with the girl and the scar in the back, that was really powerful. I don't know, it's just like I almost wanted to cry when I saw it.
And that's the point of this exhibit: expose people to the variety of artwork created by Native American women who may never have received the credit they deserve.
This exhibition has so many testaments of these women saying that despite everything that's happened to Native women, the cultures and the traditions are still so strong.
This touring exhibit remains in Washington until May. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. In addition to many great digital avenues to hear our program, you can hear us on the radio throughout Asia. We say hello today to everyone listening at Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. We're glad to have you with us. We're also glad to have our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Peter Hunley, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington, and we hope you have a great day ahead.